Welcome to Laugh Factory Live Podcast with Ian Ellis, Kimberly Marion, and Leroy Hicks. In this episode, we're joined by Corey Smith, and then toward the end of it, Sarah Gallagher came in, and we're going to cut it into two parts, and so next week we'll come back with Sarah Gallagher and Corey Smith together. You can follow me on Twitter at Chicago Open Mic. You can follow KB at K Marion Comedy. You can follow Leroy at WhySoFunny1. You can follow The Laugh Factory at LaughFactory_CH. And you can follow Corey Smith at The Corey Smith. Also, he hosted the Whip Podcast for two seasons, and those are available on iTunes. So go check out the Whip Podcast and find Corey wherever he's at, because he's a dope comic. All right. Peace.
Good. I like him.
Feels alien. Right now. Like, I don't feel it in the moment or in the conversation.
It takes us out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought we were talking about listening to music. My bad.
I'll listen to music on headphones the best.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Right?
Welcome to the Laugh Factory Live Podcast with Ian Ellis and...
Yo, your boy Leroy Hits, man. What's going on, y'all?
Today we're joined by a very special guest, Mr.
Corey Smith. What's going on?
What's up, Corey? What's happening, bro?
We're recording live in the secret offices of the Laugh Factory where there's some sort of garage sale going on.
I'll take that dresser, man.
I would, too. I would take the Rodney Dangerfield.
I'm going to give you $5. You want to help me carry it to my place?
I feel like it was furnished with Craigslist ads.
It probably was, man. But that's good wood right there. That's cherry wood.
And we're going to be we're celebrating 420.
420 in the building. What's going on, y'all?
Leroy, how did you know that was cherry?
You know what? Very good question. My mom used to want to be an interior designer, so... We will always go around to like yard sales and whatnot and look at things. And she told me about wood. So she'd be like, "What wood is this?" I'd be like, "Oh." She'd be like, "No, cherry." Slap me across the face. So a lot of good weapons and helped me remember that this is cherry wood, bro. You can tell by the texture.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, you took like a 2 second glance. Yeah, you're like, "No, that's cherry."
Hey,
made
mom,
1979, handcrafted.
I'm telling you,
that's also how Jesus became a carpenter.
And that's true.
Mary was probably like, "You're not just gonna sit around here being the son of God all day. You're gonna learn your wood. You're gonna craft something."
Right, you're gonna learn today because I learned. It took me back to like 1994 when my mom asked me what wood that was. So, yeah, that's how I know, Corey.
So I'm excited because I want to spaz out on comedy, and you're a comedy nerd, so we can
spaz
talk that talk.
Out.
Let's do it.
And you were saying, we were smoking in the alley, you were talking about comics that have had the most success early on that haven't died have all been characters, whereas like the Bill Hicks or the Greg Giraldo that didn't have a separate persona. You want to unpack that for us?
Yeah, actually died is what you were going to say, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When... I was just thinking about it the other day and looking at all the guys that get super famous and make a lot of money out of nowhere. All those comics are characters. Yeah. And I was telling specifically like Dice, Larry the Cable Guy, Jeff Dunham. They're all like specific style of characters, and they get really big for a while, and then eventually they fade out. Bobcat Goldthwait. Who's, I think, amazing.
Yeah, true.
But, I mean,
true.
He, like, doing that character, true. He got huge.
Yeah.
Got him a huge TV show from that character, based around that character he does. It's just that voice. Jim Brewer, another big example, got huge out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then it's not him. That's not really Jim Brewer. That's a character.
Exactly. Jim Brewer knows if he's doing a show to bring out Goat Boy before he closes or the audience is going to be mad.
Is that a problem? That seems like the Rolling Stones always have to play, one song every time they do any concert.
Yep.
The closer has to be what song, guys?
Sympathy for the Devil.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Do I have the wrong one?
Jesus, is that not the least popular Stone song?
I think that's Ian's favorite song. He says sympathy.
That backfired in my face. Never mind.
It's literally the only one I know.
It's Satisfaction, dude. Everybody knows Satisfaction.
Twice. It's practically my favorite song. I mean,
Sure.
The
now
words about being satisfied. It's
can't get no.
Phenomenal.
Can't get no.
That the hook there,
But Corey, like, all right. So on the flip side of, I'm just trying to ride this wave out. So, but on the flip side of it, take a person like Dave Chappelle, and Dave Chappelle is a character, but he's still, you know, an actual comic. But
Dave Chappelle's not a character.
Well, it's not. The Dave Chappelle show became so bigger, and people wanted him to do Rick James. It wasn't a stand-up bit.
Right.
It wasn't a stand-up bit, but he doesn't, at the end of his shows, he doesn't, you know what, I'm going to close it out with the I'm Rick James, bitch. He doesn't do that. He wants to do more.
That's why I said he's very real. And yeah, exactly. All right, so Dave Chappelle's a very specific case, but I think there might be two or three comics out there right now.
It's a few.
I don't think he'll be able to do comedy shows anymore, like theaters.
Yeah.
If you watch those blow-ups, those crazy, you know, you heard about Dave Chappelle going off and refusing to do comedy. Did you watch that video?
Have you seen it? They shout out things. They're like, I'm Rick James.
He can't get a word out. He can't.
He's trying new bits in. We know how hard
that is. He may be too big for comedy at this point.
Well, you know what? I have to disagree because I think he's taking an approach. The only thing that heals all wounds, and we all know this, is time. You got to give yourself enough time away from the craft, wanting them to miss you more. Like, they're going to shut up about XYZ, and they're going to listen about ABC. Like, in my opinion, like, that's the best. Like, when people give it enough time, all right, we're waiting for the next thing. We're like, all right.
I mean, I've seen him do phenomenal things where, like, he'll close out the cellar, and he'll go to the last audience member leaves. He finds his space in there.
I heard,
He could do a theater that's his gig instead of some fucking stadium with Kevin Hart and Chris Rock. And
well, the gig, the blow-up gig was him. It was it was the Dave Chappelle tour. Yeah. It was all about him.
Yeah.
And this is a common theme, and I've heard comics talk about it. When he was here in Chicago for that residency for a week, I've heard comics talk about it. He cannot get a set out without being interrupted with that Rick James bullshit.
I believe it. You know, that's what happens.
He's too big. He's too big. And people have these expectations because he didn't overdo something.
Yes,
he didn't do eight seasons of Seinfeld. He did two, and at the
heat. Let me get out. And right just, at that moment,
he's like, "Fucking not for me, man! I'm gonna bounce for a while."
He disappeared skinny and came back swole. If he grew his hair out, changed his name, I wouldn't have known. He just got his samurai thing. And
I still see Letterman under that gut and fat beard. I don't know if you've seen that picture. I still see Letterman there.
Oh yeah,
you seen that picture?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
It's gross. It is. I love it. It's inspiring.
He said it's inspiring.
So, since our last conversation, I'm now working on the Corey Smith workout plan for comedy.
Okay. What's the Corey Smith workout plan?
So, for about 2 years now, I've been doing new material every week. I mean, sometimes I only get up once a week, but 5 new minutes a week, no matter what.
I like how you labeled it, the Corey Smith. Okay, go ahead.
At first, it was really hard. You know, I ate dicks for like 6 months, but eventually my riding caught up, muscles got strong, and I was able to do it.
He's just saying. He's a cool dude. Go ahead, Ian. I'm sorry.
Did you see me out in public access? While you were on vacation?
No. Were you?
No, while you were on vacation.
Go ahead.
So anyway, so started writing, and then like a lot of times I started going, like, I'll write my set just before I go up. And then I would always take my notepad with me as like a safety blanket. And most of the time I wouldn't even look at it, but it was just like, if I get lost, can't figure out where I am, I never look right here, I got it. And after talking to you, and you said, like, when you went to L.A., like, for, like, 3 months or something, you were like, I'm just...
30 days.
30 days. You're like, I'm just going crazy.
It keeps on getting bigger every time.
No. It
45.
It's 30 days, but in that 30 days, I was hitting 4 to 6 mics a night.
Fuck yeah.
Every night.
You have to.
So it was almost like 90 days.
Yeah. Because you're doing a double shift. It's like you're doing a double.
Yeah, dude.
A triple. Fuck
yeah. I mean, the set's sometimes 3 to 8 minutes, really, depending on where you go out in L.A. So it's not a whole bunch of time, but it is a bunch of sets where you are not repeating anything, right?
No.
There are these weird high bars in Chicago. Like, there was a comic that went, like, he did comedy every day for, like, 3 months, and the next person was like, for a year straight, like, don't miss a single day. Like, Hannibal is known for doing that.
Right.
And then everybody started following him. The new one's going to be you not repeating any jokes for 30 days. We'll say that's the opener. So I've been doing that for the last 2 weeks. Just no notes, no plan. You know, if I do think it's something funny, it's in the back of my head. But going up and just in the moment, finding the funny that I can, it's helped me engage a lot more. I'm a lot more aware of myself on stage, aware of my timing, aware of the audience's timing. Like, I'm syncing up a lot more with them. I want to know about, like, what was your experience going through that? And any notes or hints...
Inside Corey's head about crowd work and just being free in the moment. Like, just explain that. I know it's deep, but
That developed from the 30 days.
It does.
The one thing, It made me a way better comic. I got material out of that where I would have never gotten that by sitting there and writing. Right. That's an on-stage joke
I
only.
Agree.
I have a joke about Morgan Freeman that was done solely from that 30-day thing. And as soon as that was done, I developed that into a bit, and it has been my closer for a while. You know, I kind of... So it's out of the mix, but it's scary. That's 65% of the time I was prepared to eat major dicks when I went up on stage. Because you know those mics where everybody's not doing well. It's silence. Yeah. It's six mics in the back, or
everybody's
six comics in the back of the room waiting to go
quiet.
Up.
Yeah.
So sometimes it was just crash and burn. And it might have been at a club, and it might have been the wrong time to do that. I should have probably done something proven.
Yeah.
But I think in the long run, for me as a comedian, made me way stronger. Right.
Well, you know, it's like the black people approach. Like, I know I take it in KB. It's you just don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
If you think about it, you
right from the get-go, I saw mics differently. And I treat mics as work. It's not my showcase.
We're in the gym. We're working out. You know what I'm saying?
So, and I got over that.
Go ahead. Unpack a little bit how you think other people see mics.
Oh, man.
Say that you see it differently.
Yeah, I have a hate only relationship with open mics. I thought I would enjoy it after a while. I thought the free
day
drinks
now,
and hanging out with
Craig.
It's not.
You don't like the membership.
No, I mean, because for me, it's an office job. Mm-hmm. For me, I can, sometimes I can let loose and have a conversation and have a couple laughs with some friends at a show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I feel everything when I'm in a comedy room.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go well at open mics almost all of the time. Right. I was at the Laugh Factory mic. I was not on. I was just sitting watching. I had a couple friends on the show. They had 21 comics go up.
Damn.
Two that didn't make me feel uncomfortable. I felt bad for them. I'm empathetic.
Two. Yeah, we all are. Yeah.
Well, and this was I went up to every. I went to I don't know if you're Mike Rice is, but I was like, dude, this is a weird night.
Yeah, and sometimes it's like that.
It's a weird night.
Yeah, you
so
feel
when
it
you're doing,
in the air
when you're free balling and you've got nothing repeated and you've got nothing that you're planning on saying.
It's fuck it.
Sometimes it gets weird.
And no, it does.
One thing I'll say about this mic and a lot of mics in general is like,
oh yeah, we love the Laugh Factory open mic.
I see all mics. It's not just
comics. Well, so I see comics like working their idea of kill stuff. But they have no sense of where the audience is at, and they don't in any way try to engage the energy or raise the energy. They're just like, well, all right, I'm going to get them with this one. And it's like, sometimes you got to get them to clap.
Right,
sometimes you got to break them and get them fucking focused on you.
But that's what it breaks back down to when it comes in the crowd work. It's two separate departments, if you want to look at it as a business. But it's excellent to be in have your jokes written out and have it rehearsed, but if they're not laughing with you, you have to draw them back in. It's like going fishing. Like just because you had that rod and that what is that? That lure in the water, and you keep it in that same spot, don't mean they're gonna come and bite.
Well, there
you gotta
are
recast that bitch.
There are gonna be those comics that are like, I'm gonna be a Seinfeld or a Jeselnik. My material is gonna be what gets them. I'm probably not giving Seinfeld the credit he deserves, but to say that, like, I'm just gonna give my jokes. And they'll come or they won't come, and they stand by that, and that's to be admired, and that's the way to do it. But it's
when
for
you're
me,
saying,
it's like
no, it's different. It's different because everybody knows who Seinfeld is.
I was just gonna say,
the people that aren't fans of comedy shows, they know what Seinfeld's personality type is.
They know,
and there's an expectation of his style pun humor that the observation, you know, like that's what like when you have a name and people like you, it kind of gets easier.
It does.
The audience is there for you.
Exactly. They're on your team.
Right.
His face has been on the back of a bus for like 25 years.
Yeah,
you don't
know
who he is.
You can't count on that specifically.
But it's different levels to it. Yeah.
There are a lot of different levels.
But the main thing Corey said out of it, and I totally agree with you, is it's about getting your name recognized. Not necessarily with me, is with comics, but it's also with the audience. It's about the people who are coming out paying for the shows. Like, I definitely want to get cool with the comics, but my main job is to make these people laugh.
All right, so
period.
On that point, to be a little bit more specific about it, there are comics that are like, they'll do something offensive, quote unquote, and they'll be like, I'm a comic, guys. I mean, get the joke or don't get the joke. And a lot of times I'm going like, it's not the joke's good or bad. Your energy was fucking awful. Your delivery was terrible. and you're blaming them for not being into your smart, wonky, whatever the fuck your shit is, but you're not doing the job of performing.
Right.
Well, I mean, to a degree they are. I mean, because in their mind, this
standing
is
standing there and telling jokes. I mean, it could be a style.
But I mean, in their mind, they think it's right. It's like, I just don't agree with why address it. You have the mic, it's in your hand, and you can say whatever you want. Why address it like, yeah, I'm fucking up right now? The audience doesn't know that.
I feel like comics get this like comic elitist horseshit where they're like,
hello, thank you for calling
the
laugh.
It's my material is too good to not be working. And I'm like, it's not about your material in this particular instance.
I'm the guy. I'm the man.
All right. What are you doing, Leroy?
He's improvising.
I'm just answering the phone.
You take that shit to Second City?
Yeah, you're...
This is the last thing.
We gotta go. We're
There's not even a phone in your hand, man.
We're recording.
You're literally doing the same shit that we would... There's nobody on the line. There's no phone!
Corey, it was the phone right here. You didn't hear the ringing, bro?
I heard the ring of the phone across the goddamn room. Not some wireless two-finger...
We get the call.
And you didn't even hold it up to your face. It was like 3 feet away. You're just like...
It looked like you were blowing on a ram's horn.
Hey, fuck you guys. All right. I had to answer the phone, Corey. You just didn't see it.
You answered it in your mind, and it scared the shit out of the people that are actually here.
Corey, let me ask you this. What excuses do you see comics give for shit that they shouldn't be giving?
Explain that last part. What do you mean?
I'm sorry.
Like that's a big thing we talked to Tony about the whip is like we're taking away the excuses, right? It's the lighting, it's the crowd, or it's like as I'm saying with these like hoity-toity comics that are like, no, my material is great. They're creating an excuse to not own up to like that you failed on some part of your bargain.
Right. What's the common excuse that I hear?
Or just
about
something
failure?
You see where you're like, you want to shake them. You're like,
yeah. All right. I'll talk about this, and I just feel like I could spot it better than maybe most, but. I know when you're faking it. I know when it's rehearsed in front of a mirror and the process, like you're not registering timing.
Yeah, timing.
You're not registering the audience.
Yeah, let them laugh.
You, in your mirror speech, you've planned for a 14-second applause break that's not coming, dude.
And counting 10, 9, 3, 8, I agree.
2, 1, and anyways, I was saying,
if it's the most uncomfortable bomb when you see them pausing for that applause.
And they
just
don't know that they bombed when they're in that headspace. They're in their bathroom in front of the mirror saying the shit that they wrote down a thousand times. Which is a great process. I don't disagree with writing it down a thousand times. But I see it when it's rehearsed in the mirror. And if the room is going bad, I'm not afraid to change the emotion of the bit. To fit the room. And I think a lot of people can't either make that adjustment or don't see that it needs to be made.
Corey, I like how you think because you pay attention to detail. You know, the smallest things, you know what I'm saying? If they're not feeling it, you can feel that vibe. All right, let me put a little emotion into it. Let me get them to ride with us. I think it's because you have an eagle eye. Because as comics, we can tell when something is just not going right. Because we're looking at it. We're looking at it so in depth because we're the comic. Yeah, we're like, all right, so, don't do it, don't do it. I knew you were going to do it. Damn it, fuck.
Especially if you're about to go up. At least for me, I'm thinking like, all right, well, how do I get them to where I need to be? I'm judging what they're setting up so I can figure out how to pivot to what I'm trying to
do. Don't do that at all. Rule number one. Corey, what do you do?
If someone bombed right in front of me?
Yeah, like, say three went up, hypothetically speaking, three went up. And they bomb. Like, where's your headspace at right now? What's Corey doing?
I do one thing right before I go on stage every time.
Okay.
But I also, if three people bomb right before I'm about to go on stage, let's say at a show.
Right.
Where there's actually people, but just no one's laughing at anything.
Yeah, yeah.
My first instinct is I've got to make them laugh in the first 8 seconds, 15 seconds.
Good job.
I've got to hit them three or four times.
Come out
before
hard.
Before they realize what the hell is happening.
What the fuck is going on right now?
Right. So if it's something that I think of on the way up there, or if it's just like a really strong bit that I'm really excited to do, I made a tweak, or it's new, or something that I just, fuck you guys. Like, I got to hit you really hard, and I got to hit you often.
I like that.
Before I go on stage, I say three things to myself. Be smooth,
yeah.
You're funny, and you belong there.
I like that because it's inspirational, man.
Well, the smooth has a lot of context because it used to be confidence and it used to be stage presence. But I think smooth
is all rolled into one.
I think it rolls into one. I want to fuck the audience.
Yeah. Oh.
I want to get them intimate. I want to get excited.
Make it wet,
I
just a little bit. Wet.
So this is like where the smooth comes in.
Yeah, that is not at all your persona, though, because people just see you as like this dark, brooding figure. But in your head, you're like, no, I can. Like they, I at least know for me, for the people that I talk to, they're like, he just gets fucked up, goes up there, just fucking does raw shit. But in your head, you're like, you're planning, you've got steps, you have an agenda. It's, like, you take it a lot more seriously than I think you're probably perceived as taking it.
I think
I do and I don't. I mean, I smoke before I go on stage.
Yeah.
But I'm high, like, I was telling you outside, I try to be the most me as possible on stage.
No, you did
and
say
guess
that.
What? Somebody's stoned all the time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
All day, all day.
And I feel like the preparation, you guys shouldn't see the preparation.
No.
You know, I allow myself the notebook the first time. The first time I do that joke, I got the notebook on there.
Yeah.
After that, if I bring that notebook on stage and second time you've heard that joke, guess what? I didn't prepare.
Yeah.
But if you don't see that notebook and you don't see that, I did that at home.
I like that.
I don't do that at the mic.
Okay.
I'm in a different headspace. Mm. I've done my preparation earlier in the day.
Yeah, all day.
I plan out my sets? No.
No.
I don't have a set list.
No.
I have jokes.
Yeah.
But
I was always taught one thing, just to interject.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was always taught that Honest John, a very, very famous comedian, he said, man, all I go up there is with my opener and my closer. That's it.
I don't even have an opener or closer.
He was like, man, you know what? And everything else will fill itself in.
Yep.
But I hear you, Corey.
I like to think of it as I'm following the breadcrumbs to the laughter.
I got you.
So if I open with crowd work and I'm talking to somebody and it leads into something familiar, I followed that nugget to something I already know. It may seem like it's a wild roller coaster, and I didn't really plan on it for going to that bit, but I know how to lead people to funny.
Yeah.
So I'm not scripted. If that's what it means by if you've heard someone say that it just seems like I just get stoned and go up there, it's chaos. Absolutely, it's chaos, but it's not unplanned. I'm not unprepared.
I like that.
He's not a beginner, guys. Come on. He's not a beginner.
I know how to lead him to funny. Because Patrice, I had like this algebra equation to describe his material.
That last special he did, Elephant in the Room, is a perfect example of what I think I do.
Yeah.
He took his crowd work and it led into the stuff he wanted to talk about.
Yep.
And it was free-formed. And you didn't feel like it was rehearsed in the fucking
smooth.
Mirror.
Well, I think his...
One of the best specials of all time.
Smooth.
My sort of algebra equation for it was he would ask a pointed question, knowing the question, but he had no idea what the fuck their answer was going to be.
Exactly.
And then he would debate their answer to the funny he wanted to get to.
Exactly.
That's the breadcrumbs.
Yep.
That's the breadcrumbs.
That is.
Here's what I learned something specifically about that Elf in the Room special.
Mm-hmm.
Watch him and watch any other comedy special. You will not see someone walk on stage and start crushing that fast. Instantly, he is murdering that room. From that first goofy step he takes on stage, someone starts giggling.
Mm.
And then the crowd work right away with the girl's tits up front.
Yeah.
From the get-go has...
He cultivated like an essence to where like his face could express so much. His walk,
he was funny. Yeah. He was confident.
Yeah. He exuded.
Confident. He was naturally funny.
You know what? Yeah, yeah.
He's got that Rodney Dangerfield funny.
That S. Yep, I agree with you. And that natural funny is very hard to find. Like I think Corey, you have that natural funny. Like Ian, I think you have that natural funny too. It's just something inside you. Like this is you. Like you said, this is you.
Right.
You're not getting any different if I'm off the stage or I'm on the stage. It's the same me.
Right. I can turn it off. You know what I mean? I'm not running bits on your concert.
Yeah. Oh, no. Hell no. Who wants that all
You know
day?
What I mean?
Yeah. Who wants that
but
all day?
But, I'm me. Like, my personality, the stuff that I'm trying to portray on stage, that's absolutely me.
All day.
It's an heightened, funnier version of myself, and some of it might be a little absurd and silly, but I'm absurd and silly.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit of an introvert, and I'm a little bit of an extrovert. So if you see me off stage and I'm not really talking, I might be processing something.
Yeah.
I'm always running with the comedian mind. Something's always going to turn into a bit. I've already got a list running, you know what I mean?
All already. Hey, that was funny.
Right.
Mental report.
Just let me process that real quick so I don't forget it and I'll get to it later.
And like when you were saying, like, I love crowd work. That's one of my specialties. I know when I'm...
It gets me hard, man.
Man, it does, man. Like, you don't understand. Like you're in the moment.
I love people that love comedy.
It's like you got to be, like, 5 steps ahead of the game. Like, you don't understand what's going through our head. Like, just one moment. All right, clear your mind out. Just think about this. We're telling a joke. And while we're telling you that joke, we're thinking about 3 jokes... that are ahead of this joke right now.
It depends on the night for me.
It does depend. I know sometimes in my mind it's like that. If a crowd says something with this joke, I gotta stop thinking about these other 3 jokes, and now I'm with the crowd in this moment. Like, you don't understand. Like, the thought process is crazy. I don't know where it comes from. Sometimes I get tunnel vision. I'm like, I don't know how I came up with that. It's crazy. Like, how did that just happen right now?
Yeah, you get into those weird, six, like, you synchronize with the audience, so well that you're not even there.
You're
you know what I mean? Like, you're processing stuff either early or a half second behind.
Yeah,
like you're almost watching yourself.
Yeah,
and that's more to the like I was gonna say, it's like no mind. Like, I don't have that. Like, I don't think about my jokes. I don't even know where the fuck they come from half the time. It's just like I'm just there and it just happens. It's not. There's no. No, like, blueprint in my head. It's like, we're just here and this is just happening and I'm enjoying it and I'm experiencing it the same way they're experiencing
right.
it.
Right.
Sometimes I got a competitive edge, so sometimes sometimes I'm there. It's just like, I don't know. To me, I feel like, all right, so if we're all 3 on the show and you guys are my friends, so I'm going to make sure, I know you guys are going to go up there and kill it, but my main injection is I gotta kill Ian and Corey. I gotta kill him. Like,
as we get into the competitive, you want to be the greatest comic of all time. I want to be the greatest comic of all time.
But I don't want. I'm not competitive like that.
Hold on,
if
guys,
I'm on
the
a show,
ringing.
Shut the fuck up, man. Now, if I'm on a show though, and my friends are on the show, or if there's other comics, that I want everybody to do great.
Oh yeah, me too. But
I want the experience.
Yeah.
Right. I want the experience to be great.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, like, at the very beginning, I felt like, man, I want to be better than these guys.
Yeah.
Like, I want to have the best set of the night.
Yeah. I don't think that's a mean thing.
No. But I don't think like that anymore.
Okay.
I
love seeing people succeed, because if it's better than me, then it's like, oh, that's more to achieve, more to want to do.
I mean,
more,
I feel like I get inspired by everybody, but go ahead, Corey.
When I see someone do better than me that night, or I see someone that has something that I'm just like, wow, I could not be capable of doing that.
That's what,
that doesn't make me mad. That makes me right.
No, I never get
that
mad.
That makes me
never
go home and right.
Exactly.
And I get motivated.
Yep. Let me try this out. Let me leave my comfort zone for a second.
There are some people out there that, there's a lot of comics that will make a couple decisions where they won't hang out with you because you're not funny, or they only want to hang out with you because you're funny.
See, I don't got time for that. Real recognize real. Like, we're here. Come on, man. Let's just help each other out, because we all have our own lane. We all have our own dreams that we want to accomplish, but together we accomplish so much more.
Right. If you're stepping on people, you're not going to get there either.
No.
Not
no.
in this day and age. No. There's not going to be another Carlos Mencia that sneaks through the crowd.
Hell no.
You know what I mean?
Hell no. And people are always going to remember you.
Yeah. A point to what you were saying earlier, what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, that I didn't quite give you an answer, but the
true
one
that.
Thing that I learned about doing 30 days bang, of bang. No material, nothing repeated, was to respect the silence, to get comfortable with taking a moment.
Rule number one.
If you own it, if you're really reflecting and not stuttering or like trying to like, if you're letting it soak in and they know you're analyzing something in the moment, it's okay to take a second.
Okay.
You can let
it's
that,
okay.
and it might change the atmosphere of the room.
Just a little bit.
But you can use that to a positive. It doesn't all
wave.
Have to be
bang, bang,
all
bang,
cylinders
bang, bang,
running.
Bang, bang.
I mean, definitely if people are eating it, I want to come out guns blazing.
Yeah.
You know?
But you got to let them laugh. Let them
And you got to let stuff soak in sometimes, too.
You do.
So
you do.
It got take me comfortable with the silence.
You don't have to be shaken by silence.
Right. That made me so nervous at first, man. Any kind of silence.
Well, I was watching Jeff Ross one night, and he was just working out new shit, and he like, you know, he'd do a little bit, and he'd walk to the other side of the stage very slowly, and he'd pause, and he'd think, and he'd do a little bit more, or maybe he would change it. And I was like, this dude is walking around in the joke. he's not in a rush. He's just he's exploring. He's doing what he was doing, but he's comfortable up there. Right. And he's like, I gotta incorporate. I gotta get to that level of comfort. I want to be able to do that.
That seems like comfort, but it also seems like he put the work in beforehand. Even if it was a new joke.
Oh yeah.
He probably had punchlines that he definitely wanted to try to remember.
Right.
Or points that led into a direction of a punchline that he might think of on stage.
Exactly.
So it seems like prepared confidence when you're seeing
prepared
something like that.
Prepared confidence. Yeah. Wow, that's a new term right there, Corey. I like that. Prepared confidence.
Yeah. Some Jay Moore said this. You're nervous till you realize you're prepared.
Yeah. There was a point where I was against preparing. I definitely took the Marc Maron approach for a couple of years where I was just like,
approach.
Well, because I over-prepared and I made myself overthink it and it got in my head a little bit.
I'm an overthinker.
I had to find
whoa.
Yep. I had to find the right balance.
Yeah.
And I figured out that putting your work in that day before you make the trip to the mic or to the show, putting your work in that day so you're comfortable to fall into yourself before you go on stage.
Yep.
You're not like, oh shit, I forgot to write that one down. What's that fucking punchline?
No, I agree with you.
I fucking crammed it earlier, man.
I agree. And that, you know, that's probably my level of preparation. Like, I want to be more on it because I had that approach before. I was like, no, I'm good. I'll remember it. Sometimes I would, but my brain would lead me to so many different alleys and whatnot. Yeah,
you'll get off track.
But then then you watch people that inspire you. Like, KB inspires me. So when I watch KB, she's so precise with it. She's so, you know, it's leading. And I'm like, damn. Like,
and she'll perform anywhere for anywhere. We went up to Madison. We were supposed to do a big show.
Yeah.
There was like six people there. And I was like, man, fuck this. And she was like, no, let's go do our time.
We're going to do it.
I always do my time.
Man. I don't care if there's two people in the audience. Man,
it's going to be a different show. You know what I mean?
A little bit more crowd work. But we're going to have a good time. I'm going to make you guys enjoy coming out. I don't care if it's two people.
This is something that I learned when I was out in Colorado Springs. I was at a comedy club called Loonies. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Say it again.
Loonies.
Loonies?
Loonies in Colorado Springs.
Downtown?
No. It's a little off the side.
Okay.
I was just hanging out with a couple comics. There was a couple comics coming in from the weekend. And the World Series of Comedy winner from that year, Ty Rivera, was there for the weekend. And they did two shows.
Like that's a joke.
They did a 7 o'clock and a 10:30 show. We were there for the 7 o'clock show. Me and my buddy, we got high in the parking lot, shooting the shit with the other comics and the owner. They were there. We watched the show.
You
know, just a good night out.
Okay.
The audience was full. Everybody murdered it. He did fantastic.
That's good.
let's stick around, man. Like, well, you know, we're going to have another drink. Let's watch the late show.
All right.
9 people show up. And
Damn.
The feature bounced 6 minutes into his 20-minute set. The host barely did any time. It was awkward. It was real weird. And I watched Ty go up there, change gears, and do a completely different show for these people that didn't get every punchline that his last set had, but it was so intimate and enjoyable.
Yep.
And I learned a lot from that night. You gotta be able to change gears.
Man, you gotta be able to throw everything out. One moment, you gotta make that split decision. Do I do what everybody else went and did and bomb that shit, or do I switch it up?
Yeah.
And you gotta have confidence.
Well, that's one thing you'll learn at the Comedy Store, and you probably saw this, where like, you watch people eat dicks for 2 hours, and then that one fucking person comes along, same
up.
People brings the fucking roof down.
Boom.
Yeah. That's all it takes.
It's the relatability, man.
Yeah, it really is.
There's that instant connection with an audience sometimes, so just carry you right through. You know, if you're likable enough when you walk up there, if you say the right thing when you open up.
Your first word out your mouth. They're judging you already how you look. Like,
well, especially if the night's going rough, man. They're like, who the fuck is next?
Please, how many more?
Bring up another comic.
Can I get two more, please? That's how it is, especially with the open mics. But people, you gotta understand that this is for like all the audience members. Open mic is more, it's a practice. That's what we keep on talking about. That's somewhere where we go up and we try out different material to see if it works. Like, understand that when audience,
it's not what everybody at open mics does.
No. You know what, everybody else does something else, but at the same time, I don't give a fuck. I do what I do.
When you're at that open mic level, especially when you're new, you don't see it as the gym. It's like,
but
everything is like your big break, your big night, or whatever the fuck it is.
You have to realize, like, look at the bigger picture. It's an open mic. Go up there and just work out your material.
Yep.
That's it. Stick to the game plan.
Jordan Holmes one night was like, if you haven't lost your shit on stage, you're not a real comic. And I feel like you have to have a couple of those nights before you
raw.
Before you give a fuck about the audience and you're like, okay, I am here to work. This isn't necessarily about like
there's a difference.
All this other horse shit.
There's a difference. If there's a paid audience, I'm definitely there to work. I'm definitely there to put it all out on the line.
True. And think about it, like, just like open mics is like, let's look at it like the gym. Open mics, you're going in the gym, you're working out, like, you're gonna wanna give up. Like, the open mics really make you a little bit tougher because it's letting you know if you can't handle that at the open mic, you won't handle that at the show.
I got two sides on that, man. Yeah. It's good news.
How do you feel? Yeah.
Okay, the thick skin survived.
Yeah.
How many thick skinned, horrible fucking comedians are there? But on the other hand,
reptiles.
You look at the other side, we're pushing people out that don't want to deal with the bullshit.
Yeah.
So how many Mitch Hedbergs aren't doing comedy because they're like, fuck that?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so many hilarious people that probably only have done comedy one time.
You're right.
When I talk about the gym,
does that
mentality,
go back to drive? The
yeah, expectations though too.
Expectations,
you know?
Yeah, I do agree with you on that because
you don't
your
know
head
what to
gets
expect.
Blown up. You don't. Especially when you first come in the game, hey little lady. Especially when you first come in the game, you're always thinking bigger than life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh man, this is the next break, man. I just got cash for this show. I just did this.
Well, how many comics? I saw maybe 8 brand new first timers tonight at the Laugh Factory.
Oh yeah, I saw. Yeah.
How many comics do you think walk to a club like this and think, man, I just got to get one good set in? And then, boom, I'm working at the Laugh Factory, opening up for Adam Sandler.
You know what? That's all it takes, yeah.
I
look at the little bumpers in Kansas City.
But how many people? How many people, though? You know, how many people think that? You know
what?
A lot. Everybody, almost. Everybody.
Really late.
You know?
At 27.
I was...
Hey, hold on. That's not
I
late,
didn't
bro.
Know,
what are you talking about?
I felt like it was late, too.
I didn't know that there was an open mic. I didn't know that's how you became a... I didn't know there was a fucking process. I thought you just funny life. One day, somebody taps you on
the
shoulder.
That's
the
expectations.
And so I definitely had that mindset of like, oh, you just one day you're at Second City, they pull you on stage, next thing you know, you're at SNL.
Well, that's how it usually was back in the day.
I mean, some of it, but that era's gone. That era's dead and gone.
It's technology now.
Well, and there's
YouTube,
not the,
I'll give you that.
There's not the Roseanne opportunity. There's not the Seinfeld opportunity.
But you know what? You got to create those opportunities.
It's just
you
a different avenue now.
It is a different avenue.
What I'm talking about, it's not like you go up and you Tim Allen it, where you got your first move to LA,
nice
your first
example.
Couple sets, people are like,
hey,
let's get that guy home improvement.
His
life is done.
You're right.
He's set. That's not the game.
Hey, Corey, trust me, man. We like honestly, like our game, and when I say our game, because I'm an African American comedian, our game is like Bernie Mac.
You're black,
like,
dude.
You know, hey, right. Like our game is like Bernie Mac. Like we have to wait years for the industry to really look at us. Like it took them so long. Like Bernie was the last one to get a TV show.
I think it's
the
kinda,
last one.
It's kind of like fucking making it in Europe, but you want to make it in America. It's like the black circuit will make you wealthy. You could be a millionaire.
Yeah,
on the
I agree
circuit,
with you there.
But you want that, like
I want
to be
household.
All of America.
I want to fuck.
You
want to
cross
people.
The line
yeah.
and be you know black.
I
want to
be like OJ, but not killing nobody.
Do you guys think of it as when you do a performance or tell a joke? That you want as many people to laugh at it as possible, or you don't give a shit who laughs at it?
It depends on what I'm doing. I love the Patrice thing of like you shouldn't have all of them, it should be about 50-50. And a lot of my material, I want you to be uncomfortable, and if you like it too much, then you're interpreting it wrong. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable to see this truth and to see this thing I'm saying. But also, I'm going to say it in a funny way, but it's supposed to make you, it's supposed to be guilty or, you know, like, oh, yeah, fuck, we should take care of that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think with me.
I mean, in terms of how you do comedy, that makes total sense.
I think
it's that thing of like, I want to be reckoned with. It's,
right.
Yeah.
you got some shit to say.
Yeah, hear me roar. I think with me, like,
I have the tech.
I don't give a fuck because I think I'm an overthinker. So if I try to make it for just this crowd, the joke won't be the same. So I got to give like, all right, this is an idea that came to me and it came to me. So I'm about to tell it how it is and I want everybody to laugh at it, but I'm not aiming. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I really don't give a fuck.
I just think if I've got a solid bit
uh-huh.
and I think I construct my material maybe a little bit differently than most, because I'm not even worried about the biggest laugh at the end, honestly. And I and I feel like a lot of people set that as a rule that the biggest laugh should be at the end.
Yeah.
But I want so many damn punches in that joke.
I
want
to
that
fuck
everybody
you up.
Laughs at that 2 minute chunk.
Yeah.
It's not all the same joke.
Exactly.
Unless I've got some longer stories and there are like a few things, but you're meant to laugh at the end.
Exactly.
But when I construct a lot of jokes, I'm looking at, can I get everybody to laugh one time?
At one thing, or all of it?
All of it. One time, or can I... The biggest goal, and I how I feel like I've been writing jokes lately, is the roll.
What you mean?
Punch, 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 to where they're rolling laughing.
There's no break. Yeah.
Right, you can't tell when the laughter stopped at each punch.
Right.
It's all funny to them.
Yeah.
So that's how I try to construct a joke to where it's a roll. I might not get you with the first couple seconds of my joke, but there's another switch coming that you might enjoy.
Yep.
So hopefully I can get everybody rolling at the end of it.
Exactly. Okay.
We're going to take a short break. We got our other guests in the wings.
Yeah.
And we're probably going to come back and talk about comics comic
Corey,
versus Ian. Biggest comic. This is an interesting conversation. We're going to unpack it.
And hold on. Before we go on the break, we're also going to talk about just comics with women. Like, you know, Corey, I heard you're dating, man. Pretty girls around, man. Is that true? Is it?
I've always been dating.
Okay, but I heard we're just...
You came out of your chrysalis and puberty struck.
Are you talking about I've been dating comics? Is that what you're saying?
Not comics, but just the lifestyle. Like, the girls that choose comics will be surprised. Like, they're not bad looking.
Talk about relationship or just, you know, fucking.
Yeah, fuck it.
Both.
We'll be back.
And I think Sarah's going to have something to say.
Yo. Let me go answer the phone.